partly, it's both things. It has to do with the way you're functioning as a professional and so forth. There are questions about your work, but it's also much more broad than that. Maybe we better stop for a minute.
So, like, I was down in the headquarters all during... And, you know, I never even gave it a thought about my personal. Later when I read about it, I have a cousin who lives in Middletown, and he took his children up Perry County, our old home. And, you know, I never thought of my parents in Liverpool, in New Bloomfield, or any personal connection at all. This is what kind of amused me when you said that. With just no personal aspect entered into this at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had no one here at home. My family's up in Perry County, and I wasn't concerned about them. I probably wouldn't have been if they'd have been here, because it was that kind of a thing. When you get involved with Red Cross, and I think almost everyone down there would feel the same way, unless there's some of those men that would have families in the area. But unless you had some real personal relationship to others, you wouldn't even think of any personal thing. And I never did at the time. In fact, after it was all over, somebody said, "Weren't you scared?" And I said, "Gee, I never thought of that. I treat it like any other Red Cross disaster."
Mm-hmm.
And this is true. I mean, so a flooding or a fire or whatever, you're at headquarters, you don't think about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you will simply then, on parts of the interview, have no personal response at all.
No,
which is fine. There are others who have had similar relationships to the questionnaire, primarily because they are professionally involved and so forth, and are in probably what you were, a 24-hour-a-day working.
Right. Right.
And expect this as in the course of their professional life.
This is my job. I do it. I don't even think about that. If I have time, I go home and change my clothes or dress. And I eat there. So actually, there's no personal thing involved in this at all. That's why I questioned that age bit.
Well, as you probably know from other surveys, that this is routine data to collect. I mean, we've interviewed everybody from 40-year-olds to 90-year-olds. And it's one of the correlations to attitude one wants to check. In fact, we already have information that indicates that responses to this situation have a great deal to do with generational identification.
Well, I would prefer if you keep this as a professional thing rather than personal.
Would you be willing then, as we go through, to simply say you'd rather not answer
when
that sort of question comes
right.
up?
Right.
Okay.
I really thought this was strictly a Red Cross thing, which I'm very happy to do. But I would prefer not. I had no personal connection. There would be no reason for it at all.
All right.
And I have no feelings. Here again, Red Cross. We have no politics, we have no religion as such when we're in. We aren't classified. You know, I'm a Red Cross disaster worker. I have no feelings about what happened to TMI or whose fault it was or what should be done. This is no concern. This is a professional thing. I was assisting in the disaster headquarters, and that's it. I certainly wouldn't care to answer anything else, you know.
Well, as I said at the beginning, if any of these questions that you don't want to respond to,
right.
simply say it, rather not respond.
Right. This is how we feel in Red Cross, that we're working for, we are a quasi-governmental agency. We wouldn't want to get in a position of criticizing Met Ed or anybody, you say,
mm-hmm.
or the government. We wouldn't say whether it's right or wrong to build nuclear plants. This is not the concern here. Our main concern is helping victims of a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
We're set up for this on man-made disasters or natural. This is what we were stressing previously, was what we would do on a man-made disaster, a nuclear attack.
Mm-hmm.
I might have some violent feelings on this if it was a nuclear attack, Mm-hmm. But under the circumstances, I have no personal feelings on this at all. This is strictly, it happened, and we were trying to help the people.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go on with that? How did it affect your work?
Are we broadcasting this mm-hmm. now? Okay. Red Cross and the governmental agencies, the Office of Emergency Preparedness, have an agreement on a national level. And we have assumed responsibilities, each one of us. Office of Emergency Preparedness takes care of the rescue work, getting people out of the disaster area. Then Red Cross's main concern is taking care of the victims, their immediate needs, and helping in the long-range planning to return them to their normal way of life. Mm-hmm. So there's no conflict of operations on a national level. We have an agreement signed, and this we work together. Whenever there's a disaster, I receive a call immediately to go down to disaster headquarters. I usually sit in the Cumberland County Office of Emergency Preparedness. We have my counterpart in the state Office of Emergency Preparedness, and we have a Red Cross representative nationally. Mm-hmm. So it's more or less a natural division of responsibilities for either a man-made disaster or a natural disaster, which is distinguished by flooding would be a natural disaster, fires could be natural, and this TMI, I don't think it's ever been decided, you know, it was a nuclear accident as far as we're concerned.
Mm-hmm. How did it call you, upon you in your job?
Well, I received a call and I was down in the headquarters as soon as I had gotten there, I received a call from the Red Cross representative on the state level to make sure that we had the county level manned. Mm-hmm. And I had also recruited our volunteers from our disaster team to assist in the event that there would be a need for their services.
Mm-hmm. Did you, do you remember when you first heard that there might be a problem there?
I think it was Friday. I don't remember the date. Mm-hmm. Friday morning. Mm-hmm. I was out of town when the first reports were in the newspaper, and I returned on Thursday. But the first call I had from Office of Emergency Preparedness, I think, was Friday morning, mm-hmm. an alert. Mm-hmm. And then I was down in their office for a short time at that time.
What does an alert mean?
Well, when we feel that there's a storm coming or a disaster of any kind like this, we're alerted. I have a monitor in my office, and this broadcasts the storm warnings, for instance. And, of course, if something occurs that is not a storm or can be forecast like that, I carry this monitor with me all the time, even at night, which is tuned to the Civil Defense Network. Mm-hmm. So this would alert our disaster people that there was some reason for us to contact Office of Emergency Preparedness and start our regular duties.
Okay, so you got the alert, and what does that set in motion for you?
As soon as I got down, and I went down immediately to the Office of Emergency Preparedness. From there, they have all kinds of telephone facilities and a great setup. So from there, after I had talked with some of the people down there, I immediately started to recruit our disaster team. We have a team of about 15 people who are trained in disaster. And I alerted them to the fact that we might be calling them. This was just a thing, where are you going to be, you know, in the next few mm-hmm. hours, this weekend? Can we depend on you? Will you be available? As soon as I had done this, then we really started working closer with Office of Emergency Preparedness to see what they had done and how far they'd come along. At this time, we're talking only of evacuation.
Sure. And a potential lockdown.
Right.
The 15 people, what sort of area does that cover? Is that... Carlisle, or is that Cumberland County, or?
Our chapter name's misleading. It's Cumberland County chapter, but we cover not all of Cumberland County, just the area from New Kingston, from the township line to west, and all of Cumberland County, including the entire borough of Shippensburg, part of which is in Franklin County.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's one of the few boroughs, I think it's probably the only borough in the state that's in two counties. But we cover the entire borough. At that time, we were talking about evacuation in a 20-mile area. I think the 20-mile area came close to our chapter line.
Mm-hmm.
Harrisburg chapter covers the eastern part of our county, which we all call the West Shore area. At that time, they asked me, since I was sitting in Cumberland County headquarters, if I would just carry on for all of Cumberland County. So we were planning evacuation. I was working closely with Mr. Blosser on this entire evacuation from Cumberland County. His area, too, is Cumberland County. So it really works out a little better that way instead of getting two Red Cross chapters involved.
Mm-hmm.
Which we would in a smaller disaster. In other words, if there's flooding on the West Shore, that's Harrisburg chapter area.
I see.
But this was, of course, bigger than...
At least potentially so.
Right.
Were you... Then you were in planning sessions with Blosser and the others who were working on it.
I sat in all those sessions, how they were planning to evacuate.
Now you needed to know that because your end of things comes in once people are moved somewhere.
Right.
Now, can you tell me a little about that?
The Red Cross's function is to set up mass care. We started our planning immediately after we learned how they were to be evacuated in buses and where. Our planning normally for a mass care center is a large building that would be able to house quite a few individuals. In this instance, we were planning to use all the schools. So we immediately contacted the supervising principals of the four schools in our area. This is Carlisle area, South Middleton, Big Spring, and Shippensburg.
Mm-hmm.
The supervising principals of those four schools were most cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
In a few hours, they met with me and we sat down and discussed what facilities would be needed, how it could be handled efficiently, and proceeded from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was they were going to be used for, to receive people.
Right. They were the reception centers, as we call them, would be where the people get on the buses and how this information was sent out by Office of Emergency Preparedness, go to this place to get the school buses. Then we were prepared here to receive them. X number of buses would be sent to this school and so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
With the help of the supervising principals, we were able to set up facilities in each school, including the elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
We had recruited teachers as volunteers. The principals of each school were recruited. The cooperation we received was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It usually isn't a disaster. We expect it. People are always willing to help others, but this was even outstanding, way over and beyond that.
Even more than what you usually experience.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We expect and we always get great cooperation from volunteers. But this was, the supervising principals told me that they asked their staff, who would volunteer to serve, stressing the point that this was strictly volunteer. And at this point, there was no money to be paid. Nobody knew. And they almost couldn't believe it either. The response was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a mass care shelter, we set up... the normal Red Cross function in a disaster. We set up a team leader in each, in other words, it would be one set up for each school district. Under this team leader, we have the following, and I'm naming right now our disaster team, our trained people who are always ready. The first thing we do when the people come in is shelter. You want me to go right on?
Sure.
Is registration. We find out who the people are, where they were located before, and now they're in a Red Cross shelter. Because immediately when a disaster happens, you start getting requests from all over the United States, all over the world, asking where Mr. and Mrs. John Jones are. They know they've been displaced. We call these health and welfare inquiries. And in any kind of a disaster, you're immediately swamped with these. So we try to know where these people came from, who they are, which is not a small job, believe me. And then immediately we can answer these welfare inquiries. Now, we don't just answer them by saying Mrs. Smith and her four children are in our shelter. One of our volunteers will talk with Mrs. Smith and tell her who is asking about her. Does she want to release this information to them? Would she like to call them? Mm-hmm. Years ago, we used to do this for everyone. Now, with telephone communication facilities like they are, we usually stress when people go into a shelter, contact your mother and father, your closest relative. Tell them where you are, they are, so that they can be assured that you're safe, and even though you live in a disaster area. Sometimes it's difficult to do this, too, because you get a lot of people in a shelter and you're limited to telephones and communications. And lately, these ham radio operators have been just wonderful in assisting with this, getting messages to relatives. Then, of course, we have communications and transportation. Here I talked a little about the communications. When you set up a shelter, you always have all kinds of transportation problems. Get people there, get supplies there. And so we have a team, a member of our team who handles communications and transportation. Then we have to have a supply person to handle supplies that are needed immediately. These people are experts in this. They know what you're going to need. The first things in disaster, you're going to need food, you're going to need paper supplies, and this kind of thing, to mention a few. We have a very good member of our team who is in food service, and she had already, after being alerted, coordinated at each school with the cafeteria personnel and volunteers to assist. We use government surplus food where possible, and other food as we have to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a first aid station set up at each mass care center to take care of minor injuries. We have a nursing service representative there who helps diabetics, heart patients, things that are needed to see what that is. The nursing services representative takes care of long-term patients who might not need hospitalization but would come into the mass care center. We usually set something up with some cots in a separate room to take care of this. In disasters, we have purchased glasses that were lost in a disaster, dentures, hearing aids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wooden legs, artificial limbs, this kind of thing. We also have relations member of our team to make sure that everybody knows where the centers are located, how they get there, and all of this, these services are given by the Red Cross in any kind of a disaster at no charge. This is a Red Cross service. A portion of our fund campaign contributions are given to our national organization. If it's as soon as a major disaster occurs, there's any amount of funds that are needed to care for this. And we found that people have been very generous when something like this happens. Mm-hmm. We always receive a lot of contributions to assist in, mm-hmm. in doing these things. So there's never a charge for any of these Red Cross services. It's not as a loan or a grant. It's just given to the people who need them. One of the things we found in recent disasters, and of course it probably would have happened in this one, I don't know, is that almost everybody appears with a pet at a shelter. And this created a few little problems in the beginning. And now we set up pet shelters. We had already planned facilities to take care of the pets. We learned through experience that people don't want to be separated from their pets, and that they won't leave their homes without them, which you mm-hmm. certainly can understand. Mm-hmm. Of course, we can't have 200 people in a shelter and 200 pets. Cats, dogs, birds. So we try to set up a shelter close by with someone of our team. We have a team member for this to provide for the shelter for the pets. We also in our shelters go into recreation. When you have large groups of people in one facility for a long time, people get bored. So we get television sets, we provide recreation, babysitting, just what's needed. Actually, Red Cross has had a lot of experience in this sort of thing. So we just follow our normal routine. As I said, we learned about these pets just recently by experience. And of course, recreation, we've always done this. If it's around a holiday, we'll do parties for the holiday, you see. And the children. Here again, the people in the community are wonderful. It's very easy to arrange an amateur show or any kind of entertainment because everybody wants to help, and they realize that when there's a need, the people are very, very generous and very willing to help.
And that's where you put your reliance, apart from your trained people, on
the Red Cross coordinates community facilities. You have to have someone to coordinate this sort of thing. I know I was on a disaster a few years ago, and it was at Christmas time. Before I came with the chapter in Red Cross, I was in disaster service. So when there was a disaster anywhere, they would send a group of us there. It was at Christmas time, and every merchant and every person in that community went to have a Christmas party for these children. It's unbelievable the amount of coordination you have to have. You know, you can have X number of Christmas parties because there's X number of hours in the day. But it really is amazing what people will do and the facilities that you have to coordinate. Of course, we were talking in this time. This was all, in a way it was old and in a way it was new to Red Cross. We had never talked about that many people being evacuated. Normally, we have one or two shelters. Here, we were talking about 30 in this chapter area.
Mm-hmm.
And only down on the Gulf Coast has Red Cross ever experienced anything near this amount of evacuees. And of course, this was entirely new to me too, because I never dreamed of this number of people, you see,
mm-hmm.
and setting up shelters. Fortunately, we didn't have to do it. And it was the training experience was just great. It really was. I learned a lot. I'm sure we all did. And from this, Red Cross is revising textbooks, to include a section on nuclear accident. We're talking in terms of being able to handle mass care centers much more rapidly than we would have been. So I feel that it's been a great experience. I'm glad that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a marvelous experience, because I know that we're going to be a lot better prepared if and when, which I know never happens, it does happen, we'll all be in much better position to handle it.
Because you've gone through all this planning. Do you usually find yourself in a position of having to do that real fast?
Well, always in a disaster, you do.
But it's usually post, isn't it? It's usually after something's happened.
Well, or while it's happening. You know, if there's flooding, you evacuate people while it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I said. As soon as the Office of Emergency Preparedness calls, maybe it's only a one-family fire. Or maybe it's a flooding that involves 30, 40, 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
But here again, we were talking in big numbers.
Mm-hmm. Was there any other difference in this?
Well, the only thing, as I said, was that we have learned a lot. And that down in the Gulf areas where they're prone to hurricanes, they have evacuation plans. And we're certainly going to have a better one in every area where there's a nuclear plant now. Red Cross is planning this. Mm-hmm. This is our long-range planning on our disaster services to make sure that the chapters where each nuclear plant in the United States is located is prepared in the event something like this happens. You see, this was the first one, the first one in the world. And it fortunately did not happen. Next time we'll be much better prepared for it if it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Were you paying, or do you, in the course of your job, were you paying any attention to what was happening with the media?
Well, as I said, I was sitting down in Office of Emergency Preparedness. We were getting reports that were coming from the governor's office. There was a television set there, but I don't think, I know I didn't really pay much attention to it. What we were waiting for was the word, you know, whether or not the people were moved.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the newscasts and this kind of thing, I certainly didn't have time to watch any of them. As I said, personally, I wasn't even thinking about only whether these people were going to be evacuated.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about people leaving the area?
Well, of course, what I was doing was waiting to see if there was an official evacuation. I'm not sure I understand what did we
do. Well, how did you feel about people leaving the area ahead of such an announcement?
As I understand, sitting down there and not having access to all the newscasts, there were some people who did this on their own. This was before our mass care centers were set up, so there was no way that, you know, they just decided that they wanted to leave, and so they left. This is a personal thing, I would think, up to the individual whether they wanted to stay or go.
Mm-hmm. Did you think anything about what was happening at TNI at all?
Not really. As I said, my main thoughts were focused on how we're going to take care of these people.
Mm-hmm. Once you had your people functioning, what then did you have to do? Just wait for...
It takes a long time to get 30 shelters set up.
How long did it take?
Well, actually, everybody started moving immediately. And as I said, we got marvelous cooperation. I wasn't even finished when it was over. I had not been at every one of the schools, which I was planning to do, to sit down with the supervising principals and the principals and go into more detail. I had done some of these, but not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't in a position where I was waiting. You know, I was still working towards
the
evacuation.
These individuals don't do that. You then go to each site?
Well, actually, we had one site. These people could handle it, but this was...
It's almost as if you need 30 of those teams.
That's right. See.
Did you try to do any of that? You must have been pulling them out of sight.
Well, what I was doing was our team leader was with me. And for instance, under supplies, what we did was recruit, through the help of the supervising principal, it's the principal in each school to handle supplies.
Somebody there would be
great. See this, and be responsible, not only for supplies, but as soon as you open a mass center in a building, you have to be concerned about care of the building.
Sure.
Plumbing. See, we've learned this again through experience. You have a lot of people in a building, and you have plumbing problems, and you have all kinds of problems of people who do not take care of the facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have someone in each facility. So through the help of supervising principals, we were able to recruit almost every principal to take care of his building, which, as I said, was
so
just
you in effect put together teams that
all right.
you ordinarily send in.
All right, so we came into nursing services. So we asked the school nurses. Now this is round the clock, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have nursing services right there every minute. So they were recruiting people that they knew and friends who were RNs to help us. This was so big that we could not have handled it with our normal volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Now normally, if you're going to open one or two shelters, I have enough people on our volunteer list that we could just immediately sit down and make a few phone calls and have this covered, but not 30 shelters.
Now
it was a big operation.
Oh, sure.
As I said, I didn't have time to think about anything except that I was doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to recruit a nurse for a volunteer nurse for every hour of the day and night for 30 shelters. You've got a lot of RN volunteers.
Yes, you do.
Way over and beyond the number we have who regularly serve for us at first aid stations and blood
pressure. And at a time when they may be very involved themselves at their own hospital sites and so forth.
That's right. And you can't use people who are working.
Yeah.
You have to depend on volunteers who are retired or married, have small children. So here again, they have problems, but it's amazing the cooperation you do get.
Mm-hmm. So your new planning is going to have this laid out.
Right. This is the answer. Instead of planning for one or two shelters in the event of a disaster, we're going to have to plan for X number of shelters to take care of X number of evacuees,
mm-hmm.
as they do in the Gulf states.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're prepared down there. The chapters there know what happens. You know, it's all experience. If there's a hurricane, you know where it's going to hit and approximately how many people are going to be involved if you're sitting in that chapter area. We know here that if we're going to have flooding, it's going to be on the west shore, along the creeks. We know X number of people will probably be evacuated. You get an experience factor, which we didn't have here.
Mm-hmm. Think it would have worked?
I think it would have worked. I think we could have handled it. I'm not concerned that we couldn't. But I think if it ever happens again, it's going to be much easier, and it's going to move faster, and everybody's going to be able to handle it better.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that we could have taken care of the evacuees. I was very pleased with the way our services and due entirely to the cooperation that I was receiving from the community,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what we had to have at that point. We could, certainly, Red Cross Disaster Service can never be done by one or two people. You have to depend on all your volunteers. And we figure on a national scale that there are about 150 volunteers to every one staff member in Red Cross, right across the board, nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a disaster like this, you're working on lots bigger numbers of mm-hmm. volunteers than one staff person, you see. But as I said, when there's a need, the cooperation you receive from the community is unbelievable.
If the worst had happened over there, what did you anticipate for this area?
Well, we anticipated that the people would be evacuated here.
Did you anticipate injuries or...
Well, when you have any kind of an evacuation or a disaster, you're going to have some injuries. People get excited, they fall, they break their glasses. you have minor injuries. Yes, that's why we immediately set up first aid stations and nursing service stations. Mm-hmm. You're going to have people who are on wheelchairs, people who are not bedridden, but who need nursing services. You have diabetics, you have to give insulin. It's one of the first things you get in your nursing facilities.
Would you, you see the real difference between this and other such things you've worked on as scale?
Primarily.
Were there any other differences?
No. No, we set this up just like we would a normal Red Cross disaster operation.
Mm-hmm.
During the Agnes flooding, for instance, we had some people evacuate here. We had people come in from the highways. As soon as they closed the highways, you see, during Agnes and the flooding that we had here, and it closed the highways, and we had people who were stranded in this community who needed to go into mass care centers. But the numbers were no way in comparison to the what we would have had here.
In the course of dealing with this and planning for it, did other of your past experience come to mind? I mean, were you drawing on other of your
experiences? Oh, yes.
In specific ways, can you tell about
it? Actually, I have had some experience in disaster services. This is why I felt that we had everything planned very well. I think that our chapter was in excellent position to handle these.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought that if I hadn't been on other disasters and seen what had happened. You always say you hate to hear of a disaster, but experience in a disaster is probably the greatest help that you could have.
Mm-hmm.
The first few disasters I was on was primarily in the field of social services. Here again, you run into a lot of this on a depending on the type of disaster. You get your health and welfare inquiries, then you have people who have problems, or here they are, their son is not with them, where is he? He may be in another shelter. We weren't anticipating too much of this because we felt by the way Office of Emergency Preparedness was handling the evacuation, telling the people to go to a certain place, that the families would be arriving together. Mm-hmm. So we didn't feel that we were going to have too much of this other. Now, in another disaster, a natural disaster, flooding or something, you have a great deal of rebuilding, repairing of homes, replacing of furniture so that people can return to their homes in their normal way of living, which we were not even thinking about at this point. The first thing is to get the people in the mass care centers and take care of them. Then try to return them to their homes as soon as the disaster's over. This probably, we don't know what would have happened. You know, when they could have returned.
This is if the worst had happened.
Arrived. But when people leave their homes, regardless of what, you have fires and little things like this that just do happen in vacated homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said, this point, no one had ever, we hadn't even thought about this. Well, the first thing is to take care of the immediate needs. Then after the people are in the shelters.
Engine Company 36, Adams County Engine Company.
And after they have their immediate needs taken care of, in a major disaster, a natural disaster, when a shelter is open and people come in, you immediately work toward a time when they can be returned to their homes. You know, is the water going down, and does this home need to be rebuilt or replaced? Now, Red Cross at one time.
Holly, Eaton Dyckman Paper Mill. We're smoke condition on the second, third floor, box 3657, engine company 36, Adams County Engine Company 9, transfer station 36, 1414.
We always laugh in disaster services. We say when we open a shelter,
attention,
we set a closing day. We didn't in this one because we didn't open the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't want to stay in shelters.
No.
And we find that more and more people have other places to go. They'll go with relatives. If they have the money, they'll go to a motel in a safe place. So we never know exactly, you know, you can say there are X number of people in this community to be evacuated, but that doesn't mean that you're going to have this number in your shelters.
Shelters, right.
Because some people get in their campers and take off. That's another thing we plan for in this time, too. So many people have recreational vehicles, and we had provided parking places at each one of these schools if they wanted to come this way instead of in the buses, so that they could have stayed in their campers and come into the building for their food and their needs, you say.
236
Green. As I understand, we were planning to tell the people who are being evacuated to take their sleeping bags and their camping facilities.
Writing, I should say, in the second, third floor, the lights have gone out, they do have smoke condition.
Which makes it a lot easier for us. You know, there would be less cots and less blankets and this kind of thing.
Okay,
plus the jails. The Paramount
Holly Springs. Special response for lighting, rescue 44.
Did people around you change at all during the incident that you observed?
Well, I was sitting rescue down there with a group of professionals. You know, we've all done this before.
Rescue 44 to 1460. Headquarters, rescue 44 responding. Okay, rescue 44.
Do you think...
What's that doing to your recorder?
I'm picking it up, too. It'll be all right.
Well, you'll know what happened at Eaton Dykeman.
They simply won't transcribe that. Do you think that the whole business changed? Now, you said it's affected the Red Cross very directly because it's changed their forms of planning and everything else. Do you think it's affected the community in any other ways that you've mentioned in any long-term sense?
I couldn't answer that. I really don't know.
Did you feel that people were in control of the situation by and large?
Well, sitting down in Office of Emergency Preparedness, I would say that we were.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was extremely busy. Everybody had their own role to play. We had all had meetings. This was not the first time, you see. We had all had training. We all knew it was a group of professionals, and there was no panic there. We were all trying to do what we could to help. Everybody had their own specific job, and they were doing it with no interference from anyone else. It was really a great operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have worked.